A Shishkin Productions podcast.
What's up, Chris? No cold open because of the writer's strike, right?
Right.
What? I know it's late and I took all year, but you can stop complaining because I'm finally here. Yeah.
Hey, what's up, Sizzlers? Welcome to another episode of the Sizzle Reel Podcast.
Yo, what's up, what's up, what's up?
We're doing it remote again, and we're also very late this week.
We're a little bit late. Look, I was out of town. Yeah. We just couldn't get it going yesterday when I got back in.
Sometimes we are late, like by a couple hours or whatever, or we post the next morning. This time we're just very, very late. And I think we get one of these a year where we're very, very late.
Look, it's a federal holiday, okay?
It's true. It is a holiday. But, you know, last week was a Chris holiday. Chris was on holiday.
That's true.
Before we get into that, why don't you give him the social plugs and we'll kind of talk about
shit. Well, of course, we are at Sizzle Reel Gang on Twitter and Instagram. We are Sizzle Reel Gang at gmail.com. Send us an email. Why not? We have Sizzle Reel Gang, the website.com. It is new and improved. It's always going to be new and improved. It just keeps getting newer and more improved every day. So give it a.
We were looking at it yesterday with we were supposed to have a guest on today. And yeah. We were looking at the site with him last night, and then he bailed. And, at least he liked the site, I guess.
It's a good website. And, of course, we have the Sizzle Reel Gold Line. And that is 3-3-3-2-3-3-3-4-3-61.
Call in, leave a message. As a matter of fact, we actually have a message to play.
That's pretty exciting.
Chris, this one was directed to you. You want to hear
it? Oh, shit. Yeah, I guess I want to hear it.
Here we go.
Hey, what's up? It's your boy, Joe Nana. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I'd like to read a text message to you guys, dated Wednesday, May 31st. This is at 4:57 p.m. Hell yeah, man. Can't wait. I'll hit you up when we get down there. Well, Chris, I'm still waiting.
Yeah, I had a feeling that that Joe was going to be mad at that. But see, plans changed and my family drove down from Jacksonville for the weekend and I had to hang out with my family instead. And then Joe left town right when my family left town. He wasn't available for the second half of the week, which it was a bummer.
Joe's fault. That was Joe.
Yeah, which is a bummer because that was when my week was like completely freed up because I don't know, there was supposed to be hockey and then all of a sudden there wasn't.
Well, excuses, you know, let me explain.
Yeah, that's my bad, Joe.
Listeners who aren't privy, Chris fucked off to Florida the whole last week, didn't have any work, and he had one thing that he had to do, which was meet up with executive producer of the Sizzle Reel, Joe Nana, and he ghosted him. He ghosted him. And it's not cool, man. It's not cool. Well, I'll allow it. I'm still going to do the show today, but I know that the executive producer, Joe, is very mad right now.
I went to get ice cream sundaes in Dania Beach with my family. It was pretty nice. It was like a $20 sundae though, or maybe that was the split.
When was that?
That was Sunday night.
Wait, Joe was there too. You must have just missed him.
Oh wow, that's wild.
That was crazy.
But then we went to Miami on Sunday night, so I couldn't go all the way up to West Palm from Miami.
I guess Joe's going to have to come up here and not text you when he's here.
That's fair. That's fair. Look, I'm probably going to be in South Florida again sooner rather than later.
So what have you been up to? What are you up to last week? I know you said you were in Florida, and as far as I'm concerned, you didn't do anything, but did you do anything related to work or no? You were just really.
No. Well, like in my defense, I was scheduled originally to be working all week and then the project got pushed a couple days and I was going to start on Thursday and Friday. And that was going to be fine because the Panthers lost and there weren't any more games. So I was like, all right, well, I'm free. I'm ready for the edit. And then I think the day before it got pushed again to the following week, which is the schedule that we originally suggested anyway for it.
True. It's true.
So I got, you know, got out of that. And then it was Wednesday night when I saw the Slack, and me and my girlfriend were hanging out in at the beach, and we're like, well, shit, what do we do now? We have all this, like, I don't have work anymore. And she technically still did, but she was like, I could just call off and we could go to Key West. So we kind of had a spur of the moment Key West trip at the very end.
No, sounds like a pretty good time, honestly. It sounds like you guys did it right. You know what I mean?
We had a great time. We went, the first day we got there, we only stayed one night, but we got there super early. We walked around, got drunk, did the typical Key West stuff. And then the next day we did a little excursion. We went out on a boat. We went snorkeling. We went on a banana boat, which I didn't even know what a banana boat was. We went parasailing and we rode jet skis.
Unbelievable. You know what I did? I was here basically working 10-hour days every day, if not longer. And I was doing like 3 projects at once. So that's what I was doing.
Well, I got you this week. I'll be back. And
I'm about to spring this on you, but I'm taking Friday off this week.
That's fine.
I might take Thursday off too.
But because you're gonna be somewhere on Wednesday, right?
I'm gonna be in DC. We have a shoot. But that's still gonna be work, you know what I mean? So I'm still gonna have like a 10-hour day. But I don't know. I mean, we've been having a lot of shoots lately. That's the next thing I was gonna get into, you know. We had that one in New Orleans. Now we have one in DC. And I think that we said, well, maybe a year ago, that we're going to try to get more into production.
Yeah.
I feel like we've done it. And my kind of, I think we dipped our toe in. I think maybe right now we're like ankle deep in production. And I'm not a fan. I don't like it.
Oh, really? I think it's good that we're slowly becoming a full service production agency.
We're getting killed, though. We're getting killed on money, dude. We're not anywhere near what we should be. And it's like, it's frustrating. So I'm done with it personally. I don't want to go in anymore. I'm gonna do it because there's sometimes subjects I really care about. And I'm like, oh, it's an opportunity for me to go to a place and see a thing. And that's cool. But we've been kind of doing them at such a weird breakneck pace where we're not setting good boundaries, I think, right now. We're literally doing like 12 to 14 hour days consistently, and it's like not sustainable.
It's a little frustrating because like production, it costs more, and typically everyone gets paid more as well. Yep. And I think part of it is because the clients we're shooting for are clients that we edit for as well, and they're kind of used to the editing rate, and they don't realize how much more expensive it is to shoot something. I mean, like even a very small, simple shoot for us, I mean, you need like 4 people and they all need a good day rate. You know, you're talking like minimum probably like $6,000 a day just in labor, not let alone kit fees and, like lunches, travel,
accommodations, all that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, for me personally, like I think we've had a couple of these now where like, the travel has been very breakneck, and I'm not used to doing things like that. Like all the jobs I've worked on that involved like location, like being on location, they're usually very, I was lucky because my whole career, they've been very well spaced out. Like I've never worked for a client until this year who has been like, we're traveling and working the same day. I've literally never had that happen. And in the last 3 months, I've had it happen 3 times. And I'm just like, dude, I personally cannot do that anymore. And I don't want to put people through that. But if shooters agree to do it, then fuck it. They agree, I guess. But like, you know, in the past, like whenever I've had jobs, even if the flight like wasn't long, if it was like Portland to San Francisco, for example, that's, you know, a lot of people would make the argument that you could fly in and then get right to work.
Yeah.
But we never were expected to do that. It was like you fly in and that's your travel day, and you get ready to work the next day. And then the next day you put in a full shift. So that's something that I'm kind of trying to work on, I think, with moving forward. You know, I don't really want to be taking more gigs like that where we're shooting the same day that we're traveling.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the person, because some people like would rather just get it over with and they don't want to spend an extra day or night in whatever city we're shooting in. Yeah. And I get that. But I know for me personally, any any flight, even if it's just like a 2 hour flight, you have to add the hour and a half, like ahead of the airport. Yep. And then you have to add like another 30 minutes to an hour, you know, getting your bags, getting a taxi, checking into the hotel. I mean, even the shortest flight is ultimately like a 6 hour day. And then you have to go and start your actual work day. Like it's not for me. I can tell you that. I hate the long travel days. They take it out of me. I mean, there's something about sitting or just like slowly walking every, you know, 30 minutes somewhere that it just keeps adding up. And by the end of the day, you're just like, I just want to get in my fucking bed and go to sleep.
Yeah. I think it's really cool from like a experience perspective to do this kind of shit. It's really fun. It's like the experience you get is way, way cooler and very different than editing, right? Editing, you're sitting in front of a computer all day, it's whatever. But being on set is a cool experience in a lot of ways. But I am just bougie and shit. You know, I'm not willing to sacrifice my comfort to be on set unless I'm getting paid like an exorbitant amount.
Well, yeah, it also, you know, it depends on the shoot. Like for Treefort, for example, that's like 5 days of shooting straight. And there's no way we could start that, like just arrive in Boise and start shooting. Right. We have to have the day before to just like get all the cameras ready to align. And honestly, most importantly, we typically like go out to dinner with the group on that Tuesday night before Treefort starts. And it's kind of our only time to really have fun and not worry about the work. It does a lot for morale.
Team building. Yeah, exactly. It's a good team building thing. And it's a good way to kind of establish what the energy is going to be like, you know? I don't know. I mean, I think I've made my point clear on it, but like, it's like I said, it's something I think I'm going to try to be more cognizant of moving forward, because traveling and then shooting is wild. You know, if you're out there and you have experience with these like travel days that turn right into shoot days, call in and let us know what you think. 332-333-4361. Call in and let us know, like, do you like to get in and shoot immediately and then leave? Do you like to have a day before? Do you like to have a day after?
Well, I know Joe travels a lot. Joe Nana travels a lot for work. And I'm guessing because he stays like regionally in the Southeast, I think. So I'm guessing that he typically flies and then has to work on the same day. But I think his travel experience is a little bit different than ours.
He's in the PJ.
Yeah, he's got that PJ. So I'm curious if that changes things for him at all. Like if that experience just, you know, chills everything out a lot.
I think what's different there is that he's like an employee of the company. So he's on the clock. You know what I
mean? That's true.
Like, whereas when you're for hire, you can negotiate whether you like what, when you want to show up basically and how much extra you're going to charge for staying
over
a certain amount of hours. You know, it's weird. It's weird. I think right now, I think I've said this before, we're in this weird, like middle ground where we're not taking like the lowest paying jobs. We're definitely not taking high paying jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. One last thing on the working the same day as you travel. I think it's just logistically, it's a really bad idea for your shoot, because flight delays happen, you know, like Tyler got delayed by like 24 hours coming home the other day. I got delayed by 5 hours coming home. And like, you know, if we had something to do that day, we would just miss it. And that's our opportunity. And I think that's a poor way to plan a shoot. You never want to even have that possibility, you know, of missing the shoot because of travel delays.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's a great point, you know. And for me, it's just that's part of it. And then also just being tired. Like, I know if I had to drive 5 hours to fucking get somewhere and then start work, I'd be very tired. So.
Well, yeah. And it's always an early, early day. Like, you have to be on the first flight out, which means you're up at like, what, 5 a.m. Tyler and Katie, when they went to New Orleans, they had to be up at like 4:30 or 5 and then shoot for the entire day. Like, and then, you know, sleep and wake up and do it again the next day. And it's just, that's really tough. You know, like at the minimum, if you're going to do that, you need to have like the day before off and the day after off just to recalibrate yourself.
Yeah. What I will say, you know, going back to your thing about the unexpected things that might happen or obstacles you might run into.
Yeah.
It's a very fickle industry. You know, things always get pushed. Things always get moved around at the last minute. You can like expect something's going to happen. And then half the time, I would say probably about half the time, the project just like dies or like gets moved. Like the New Orleans thing, we were supposed to do that a month early. And then an unexpected thing happened that like no one could have predicted.
Yep.
And it had nothing to do with the shoot. It had to do with personnel on the shoot from client side. And they just like something happened with their schedule or whatever where they couldn't make it.
Mm-hmm.
They needed to be there. So everything had to move like a month, you know? Those kind of things happen. Like what when you were in Florida, right? You expected it was going to start Monday. Then you're told the Thursday before that it's going to start, or told like the Monday before that it's going to start Thursday.
Yeah.
The Friday before told it's actually going to start the next Tuesday. So, you know, all of this shit is at a certain point, like you can't do anything about it. You just have to be flexible and malleable.
Yeah. I mean, I brought down my laptop and my iPad for my second screen. I had like four hard drive. Like I had a bag dedicated just to work more or less. And then I didn't need any of it. It just like hung out with me all week.
Yeah. I think it's very interesting when stuff kind of floats around and those deadlines float around, or not those deadlines, but those kind of key dates can get moved and things you expected don't go as planned. If you ever worked on a job that kind of got moved around, call in 332-333-4361. Leave a message. Tell us about a time where you had a job that got moved around, or maybe it moved around to your benefit and you lucked out and you had a week in Florida to do nothing. Your coworker fucking stranded.
It was a special occasion.
Let's see. Oh, I'll tell you one other thing from this weekend. Got to meet I met a great editor randomly at some party, and they're in town from Florida just visiting. And
interesting.
We were just chopping it up and they were like, yeah, kind of like I'm looking for jobs. I'd love to move to New York. And I was like, oh, well, I'll keep you in mind. If we have anything, I'll let you know. Maybe we'll hire you for a gig or something. I said, you got a reel? And they were like, nah, no, I don't have a reel. And I was like, oh, well, all right. Do you have like an Instagram or something? And they were like, yeah, I do. All right, cool. I looked at it a little bit. It's pretty good. Then they're like, okay, well, I guess I do have a reel. It's just on YouTube. I shouldn't really show it to anyone. I was like, yeah, let me see it. They show it to me. It's like, so good. I was
really
like, yeah, dude, it's like it's all like YouTuber and like social media shit, but like it looks clean. Like the footage looks good and well lit and the animations are cool, and it's like this person is like good. I was like, oh shit, man. I was like, damn, kind of put our reel to shame in a way. I think
what, really,
in my opinion,
you're gonna have to send that over.
I know I'm having them send a link, but I'll show you. But I was like, damn, we lean on like having names and faces in ours.
I mean, it's true, but
really cool informations and shit.
That's just the selling points, you know, for a lot of corporate clients, just like seeing those faces is enough for them to be like, oh, they work with, you know, big names, so they must be good. I will say, though, it is about time for the refresh, the real refresh, because I don't think we've put out a new one in like 2 or 3 years now.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I'm not really motivated, so I'm probably not going to do it.
The other thing is, like, I don't think we have a lot of like new clients. Like we have a couple here and there, but for the most part, we would just be replacing older footage with newer footage from the same clients, I think.
Yep.
So it's like, is it really necessary? Like, do I show this MLS goal or the new MLS goal? Who cares?
That's why I haven't really bothered, is because I feel like we've just been, you know, we had hit a ceiling last year where like we couldn't, and I think maybe over the last 18 months even, we'd hit a ceiling where like we weren't able to take on more stuff because we were like, we had a limit with how much we could do, and we had these clients that are good, right? And you know, we had enough work. Now, who knows, maybe in the next few months things will change and we'll get more work. And I think as soon as we get new clients, then maybe it'll be time to think about updating the reel. But
absolutely,
for now it's just like, yeah, whatever. Just
gonna, well, and I think we technically did a new reel for Food Print But it's really just a specialized like food reel from Shishkin clients. So
I don't think that, you know, we need to, because that one dug even deeper into the archives in a way, because it was so targeted towards a specific genre or whatever, genre in quotes, food is genre, but you know, vertical.
Food is my favorite genre.
Let's switch gears. I'm going to pitch you on something real quick.
Sounds good.
Friend of the show, the Edit Emu, he's been on before. He is launching a new project that I am helping with. I'll reveal the name. I don't know. He might get mad at me, but he needs to keep in mind that there's only like 15 people who listen maybe to this show.
Max. Maybe.
But it's called Footage First. And I'm going to give you like a quick nutshell pitch and then you react. All right. I want to hear a real life editor reacting to this shit. Basically, it's a way to connect directors and editors. But it's where the editor gets to, as the name says, see the footage first before they take the job. So in an ideal world, the project is already shot. The script is there. Storyboards are there. Everything is there. They have the footage and they upload it, and the editor can like kind of scan through the footage and decide if they want to take that job. And then I think the director already has a price in mind.
Cool.
So what do you think? Do you think that something like this needs to exist, or what are your kind of thoughts on it?
I think it's a great idea. I think it is going to have to rely on having like a strong user base. Like I'm not sure how to get people there, but once you have people there, I think it's going to be a great service. I also think it's interesting to like kind of put the power, give the power to the editors. It's almost like Tinder versus Bumble, where like Tinder, the man's kind of expected to do everything, and Bumble, like the girl has to talk first, right? Like they have to initiate. So it's kind of like subverting the, I feel like typically the director would have his choice of editor, and editors are like, yeah, I'll fucking do it because I need the money. But being able to see the footage first is kind of crazy. I'm curious how often shoots happen before an editor is even booked is one issue that I'm thinking of.
Yeah. I think that the current way things are done, the editor is booked before the shoot even happens most of the time. But, I think this is trying to bring a new model, right? It's trying to kind of subvert it and say, hey, that doesn't have to be the way it goes. You know, especially if it's not like a strict deadline, like if it's a quick turnaround, like you shot it and then 3 days later you have to have it cut.
Yeah.
Then I get, you know, already having your editor booked. But for me, when I thought about it, I was like, oh, this would be great for like musicians and shit like that, who, you know, they can film something, but they don't necessarily know where to go for the edit, you know, or
that makes a lot of sense.
Something like that. It's, for me, the part that I'm most excited about is the community building aspect of it. I think it's going to be great for musicians and for artists and for like DIY filmmakers who just want to do experimental films and stuff like that. I think there will be like a cool user base for that to start with. And my idea is focusing on building that community. And then from there, you kind of figure out where it's going and how it's going, stuff like that.
Do you have any early ideas on how you might start to build that community?
Yeah, for me, I think like, you know, in terms of marketing, it would be cool to reach out to influencers who are specifically in the post-production space and get them to sign up for it.
Okay.
It would be cool to get musicians to sign up for it, like to hit up bands and artists and stuff who want to make content. Because you got to think, you're not always going to ask for full music videos. Sometimes you'll ask for like a Spotify canvas. It's like literally a 7 second long video. Sometimes sure. you'll ask for a TikTok, sometimes whatever you want, an Instagram lyric video. Like some of that shit is, you know, doesn't take that long to do, but they want to find a qualified person who they trust. And part of it is also like the relationship that you build, that director, that musician, whatever, let's call him in quotes, director, that sure. director finds an editor. They take it from there. It's not like, you know, not everything has to be done through the platform. You know, it's funny that you brought up Bumble, because that's when Evan pitched it to me. I was like, oh, it's kind of like Bumble.
Yeah.
It's like, damn, yeah, it kind of is. That's what it seems like. To me, I also think it's a lot like this one music website called Sound Better. where basically you can hire people to do anything. And, you know, they can, like, say you need a person to play a saxophone, you can hire them. Say you want someone to mix your song, you can hire them. And they're kind of vetted, you know?
Okay.
So you know that they have credits and you know that they're like they're good at what they do. I think it's cool. Evan is going to be doing something on LinkedIn on Wednesday, June 21st, I think. I don't know what time you'd have to
Look up,
but he's going to be kind of doing an announcement about it, or a talk about this thing and about Footage First and saying more about what it is. So I urge you to tune in.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I see this being really useful for maybe like documentary type work. Maybe you shot something like just like smaller indie features and stuff like that, or documentaries where you have all this footage and you just want to put something together from it. And you know, maybe you didn't even maybe it's footage that you didn't even shoot properly. You know, it's just like you have like all this archive of, say it's your band or whatever, and you just want to put something together. It's a great place where you could just throw that up there and, you know, let the editor see it and what, how they feel about it, and if they can work their magic with it.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what I thought. I was like, man, this would be a great thing for people to like, just put shit up and go, hey, here's what we have.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then it's also great for people who have the whole thing scripted and storyboarded and shot, and they just, for some reason, maybe like we talked about earlier, right? Projects change. Maybe an editor dropped out and suddenly they don't have an editor.
Sure.
Well, here you go. Here's where you can find one. So I don't know. I'm excited for it. If that sounds like something you'd be interested in, call in 332-333-4361. Tell us, would you use a service like that? Or do you not want to see the footage at all and just get fucking dumped on?
I've been getting dumped on my entire career.
Levels to this shit. All right. I'll be honest with you guys. I didn't write the show this week. Chris wrote the show. So
yeah. And honestly, I barely wrote the show. It seems like it's a pretty slow news week in the editor world, in the streaming and video world in general. But I do have a couple like quick hits that I think we can talk about.
Do it. Go for
this.
It.
This first one is about, now it's about Yu-Gi-Oh! The anime is going to go to a Web3 streamer called Rewarded.tv. Now, I'm not interested in the Yu-Gi-Oh! Part of it, really. I just had never heard of Web3 TV, and I thought it was a pretty interesting concept. So Rewarded.tv, their slogan is "It pays to watch," and what they say on their website is, Rewarded TV is gamifying free TV for the next generation of streaming. You can earn rewards, badges, digital collectibles, stuff that is supposed to transform your streaming experience just by watching and sharing. And yeah, I mean, it sounds like they're just gamifying things. They seem to have a few movies on here. They've got something with Kevin Hart. They've got something with James Franco. I don't really know what their content is like. I just think it's interesting that there's like a blockchain based streaming platform. And I'm curious where the future of this could go. Like, honestly, looking at it, it just seems like another thing that is going to disappear into the ether. You know, what are your thoughts on Web3 TV?
I kind of want to know who's behind this thing. I want to know who fucking started this and who the investors are and stuff like that. Because it's, I guess Replay is the name of the thing. If you go to imaginereplay.com, says Replay is reimagining video for Web3. It says they're a decentralized video platform that empowers viewers and creators, and that their mission is to create a fair and transparent video economy and to equally create new opportunities for content creators, distributors, and their fans.
Yeah. They say that currently, platforms do just a really bad job of tracking revenue and usage. And they say rev share models are frictionless. However, it's hard to create value due to accountability issues. And I think the idea here is just to be able to track usage a little bit better and pay the creators a little more equitably.
Yeah, they got these partners down here, and one of them is a thing called Shoreline Films. So when I try to click on it, it doesn't take me anywhere.
Oh, they have Bit Central, the classic Bit Central. That was the I've talked about it on the show before, but it was basically like our archival server that we used at the news station.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Shoreline Entertainment. Let's see. They are they've been around for a minute and it seems like they got a lot of people who work for them. And I guess they do good shit. Oh, they're one of those companies that puts their dogs on their about.
All right.
That's a whole thing. Yeah, man, I don't really know what to make of it. It seems cool. Like, I think I would love to like talk to the people who are behind it. I can't say I really understand what it is without like digging deep into it and reading like the white paper and all that kind of stuff. But hey, I mean, if they can actually figure out a way to, you know, make those revenue share models a little bit more accountable or spread a bit more, you know, equally and equitably, I guess. I mean, isn't that kind of what the strike is about in a lot of ways?
Basically, yeah. I think that, you know, this could be a great answer if they're able to really get this thing off the ground and get it adopted heavily. I think that it could solve some of those problems.
Oh, shit. Okay, so Shoreline, the guy who founded Shoreline made Glengarry Glen Ross, which is pretty cool.
Interesting.
That's the big one that's here. But, yeah, I don't know. Are you going to join? Are you going to subscribe to it? Is it free? How does it work?
Yeah, I think it's free. I think I might look into it. You know, it's weird because right now we have so many fucking streaming options. And, like, do I really want to sign up for one more thing that I will probably never use? Well, yeah, I kind of do just because I want to see what it's about. And maybe we can give an update in a couple weeks on our experience with it.
Yeah, I mean, you should check it out. I can tell you straight up, I'm not going to subscribe to it.
You don't want
to
watch Yu-Gi-Oh, bro?
Nah, man. My real life is enough like Yu-Gi-Oh. You know what I'm saying?
Sure, sure.
Like playing cards, riding dragons around.
that's you.
I've never seen Yu-Gi-Oh. You kind of went on here about more paying streamers type shit. You wrote Twitch are paying more to streamers. What is this all about?
Yeah, so Twitch is introducing something called Partner Plus, and it's supposed to be a program that boosts the cut that streamers earn. It would boost them up to 70%. I think typically right now, streaming partners get 50%. And, you know, it's nice. Like anytime a company is voluntarily paying their workers more, I think it's a good thing. But I will say this is basically for the best of the best streamers, because to qualify, the streamer or the partner must maintain a subscriber count of at least 350 recurring paid subscriptions for three consecutive months, which I think that's really not that bad. I think there's a lot of streamers on Twitch who have 350 subs per month.
Now that's 350 paid subscriptions and you're determining the price of them, right? So if you say like, hey, it's $1 a month or whatever.
I think that subscriptions are pretty standard with Twitch. They have different tiers, I believe. Like through Prime, if you have Amazon Prime, you get one free Prime sub per month that you don't pay anything for. Got and it. I think the streamers get like $2.50 out of that. And then they have like tier one is $5, tier two is a little more expensive, tier three, and so on. So it just depends how much you want to support. But for the most part, it's $5 a month to subscribe to a streamer.
The 70% that they're getting is out of that $5 a month or something, right?
Yes, yeah, exactly. It's only through paid subscriptions, as far as I know.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds reasonable. Sounds good, I guess. I don't know.
It also says that the 70-30 revenue share, it says for 12 months up to $100,000. Once a streamer earns $100,000 through Partner Plus, the revenue share returns to 50% for most partners, and the threshold resets every calendar year. But I mean, $100,000 is still pretty nice as a streamer.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds pretty good. It says that they also, I guess maybe a week ago or not long ago, I guess they made these branded content guidelines that were supposed to ban, I guess, branded content in a way. And then they went back on it because the community was, you know, not into that. Like,
yeah,
streamers want to be able to have the freedom to do any branded things. So,
well, and
it sounds like they're listening.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's good. And that's the thing with streamers is like, if they can't make enough money by streaming, they're going to stop streaming. It's just how it is. And then you lose that user base that logs on to Twitch to watch that content. And it's like, you know, Twitch, it's great. They provide the platform, and, you know, I'm sure that's very difficult to keep a website like that, that has like 3 million people watching at any given time. I'm sure that upkeep is insane, but ultimately they're only there for the content, for the creators, and, you know, they'll follow the creators wherever they go ultimately.
Another thing you put on here was about Netflix password crackdowns. So apparently Netflix, you know, they took that gamble, and I believe that I said on this show when they did it that I didn't think it was going to work. And now here I am. What do they call it? Eating crow or something like
that? Yeah.
Eating crow.
You're capitulating.
Tasty. Why would I eat such a smart bird? I lost a bet. Netflix password crackdown drives U.S. signups to highest levels in at least 4 years. Wow.
Yeah, that's surprising. The really surprising part to me is that in those 4 years was when COVID happened and we were all just at home watching Netflix for 6 months. I thought that would have been an increased sign up period, but yeah,
it was apparently. I mean, I'm looking at this graph and that was the highest one they've had by far until this last week or last couple of weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. So at least initially it's working. Let's see. So based on current antenna data available, Netflix average daily signups reached 73,000 people per day from May 25th to May 28th, which is over 100% increase from the prior 60-day average. Now, I don't think that's going to continue for too long. I think they're basically this first wave. That's who they're going to get. Those are the people who care about Netflix enough to pay for it. And I think everyone else is just going to let it lapse. And, you know, it's interesting because they're talking about new signups, but they haven't mentioned anything about people who are canceling their subscriptions. Because I know that a lot of people are, because they only think it's worth it because they can share it among their family. And then once you can't do that, it's like, well, why do I have this? I'm just going to cancel the subscription. So yeah, they have new people signing up, but I'm curious how many people have quit Netflix over the last month.
I think that these numbers are always going to be very fluid. I think right now is just like obviously a big change, right? Because they're saying, hey, you can't share passwords. Of course, things are going to change. Numbers are going to go up. Numbers are going to go down. It's volatile, whatever. I think ultimately the signups are going to be very, very fluid because it just depends on what's happening with the content, right? So an example for me, you know, I don't really watch that much of this shit, but I watch sports a lot. And like when the World Cup happens, I'll sign up for something for a month. I'll sign up for
Paramount Plus,
Paramount or Fubo TV or something so I can watch everything, you know?
Yeah.
And that's just an example. I mean, I was already signed up for YouTube TV, but like my point is if there's a tentpole event that I want to see, I'll sign up for that week or that month, or, you know, say like I want to watch Yellow Jackets. I'll sign up for Showtime for a month and forget about it and accidentally pay for it for 4 months. But like I think that's what Netflix is. We're just going to see them, you know, fluidly. I think they'll like lose subscribers until a big thing happens.
Yeah. Until Stranger Things 5 is out.
Or like they release another Squid Games or something.
Yeah. They just announced Squid Game 2.
Yeah. Why I always call it Squid Games?
It's funnier that way.
Everyone is pluralized. But yeah, they release another Squid Games and then suddenly boom, a little peak. And then people watch and then they drop off. That's just how it's going to be. I think that's that's going to be the rhythm of that company. You know, now people are going to be like, well, shit, I'll pay my whatever $12 a month to binge Squid Games and then I'll fucking stop.
Yeah. It. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what I just did with Apple TV. I wanted to watch the final season of Ted Lasso and it's done. So I canceled it.
Yep. Last one you have on here. Soap actors continue through strike.
Yeah, so I didn't read too far into this. I just thought it was interesting. I learned something. So apparently SAG-AFTRA's film and TV contract, we talked about it before, it expires on June 30th, but that does not apply to SAG-AFTRA members working on soap operas. So those cast members will continue to work even if the guild goes on strike. And it appears that so like Young and the Restless, Bold and Beautiful, Days of Our Lives, whatever, they're continuing to pump out scripts amid the writer's strike. They're using non-member writers. So it seems like soap operas are going to remain completely unaffected by any of these strikes.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So they say in addition, there's apparently an episode stockpile that already exists. But then they said in addition to the episode stockpile, this is from Deadline, the series remain in production and continue to generate new scripts. They're penned largely by Financial Core writers who have resigned their WGA membership while benefiting from the guild's contracts with the studios.
Yeah, so they're basically scabs.
That's very interesting because I guess I just never thought that soaps get so much have so much power, get so much play, but I guess people fucking watch them, huh?
Soaps were just like the shitty reality TV before reality TV, right? Yeah. It's just like nonsense that you have on in the background. You get invested in your shows.
It's so weird to me that it just isn't stopping. That's very bizarre. Because it's like, I guess my question is like, if they're not stopping, what stops the other shows from doing the same thing?
Like, yeah, that's actually a really good question. I think that maybe the level, like the skill level to work on these shows is not quite as high as most of Hollywood. I mean, not to shit on their talents, but soap actors and actresses are typically, you know, they were memes before memes existed. Yeah. I think people have always kind of not taken them quite as seriously. The writing of soap operas has always been trash. Like it's just crappy TV that people enjoy for whatever reason, you know, like it's the kind of stuff where people are in a coma for years and then just wake up and then they find out that they have a twin sister or whatever, you know, like it's the most absurd storylines that are just kind of like, what can we write that gets some sort of reaction? Who cares if it makes sense or not? Like, I think a soap opera is something that you could use ChatGPT to write.
There was a writer named Ron Carlovati, who I guess he's the head writer on Days of Our Lives. And he actually is a striking WGA member. And he did an interview with Deadline right when the strike kind of started. And he said, the shows don't stop. They replaced us in 2007 when I worked at One Life to Live. And I can only assume that they're replacing us right now. I'm being replaced on day one by other people. So that's kind of scummy.
Yeah, it's mad scummy. And that's so interesting. Like, how do you go back to that job after they just like went and hired scabs day one? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. Can you imagine like you're out here like striking and like fighting for rights and then finally you get them and you go back to this thing and like you're back to working with the same producers.
Yeah, right. So something I'm curious about is like, and maybe someone who has more knowledge on how everything works can chime in.
Call in.
332-333-4361. But how can they use scab writers? And then once the strike is over, how can they go back to using union writers? How is that allowed at all? I feel like once a studio starts using scabs, shouldn't the union refuse to work with them again?
Yeah, I don't really understand it. I think this is something I might write into Michael Jammin. He's like a writer and he does a lot of TikTok content and he's been doing it for a very long time and he answers a lot of people's questions and shit. So with the strike, he's been answering a lot of questions and stuff too.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll email him from Sizzle Reel and be like, hey, Michael, we have a question about how the fuck this works.
Sure. Absolutely. Let's do it.
That'll be pretty good. Chris, you got anything else for this week or should we get into what we learned last week?
I think it's time to learn some things.
That makes sense. I got to fucking finish this show and edit it and then go work on other fucking crap. All right. What we learned last week. what we learned
last week.
All right, you want me to start us off?
Let me kick us off this week.
Oh, what?
Yeah, that's right. I'm doing it. I'm going to talk about the Soho Wall. You know that big wall at Houston and like whatever by Broadway Lafayette?
Yeah.
That big wall of side of a building. It's a giant blue painted square with these green metal rods that stick out of it. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, another one.
I always thought that that was just some sort of construction thing, but turns out it's art. It's
I always thought it was an art piece.
It's an art piece. And it was, I don't remember when it was built, but it was built a long time ago. And it was commissioned and it became like a, you know, a landmark or something. So, but the people who owned the building were like, I think the building got sold, but the landmark got to stay. And the people who bought the building were like, wait, we don't want this here. We want to use the side of the building for advertising. And the city was like, nope, can't do it. And the people were like, well, those things are causing leaks. So can we at least get them removed so we can like, fix the leaks? City goes, fine, okay, you can do it. But you have like a year to fix the leaks and then you have to put it back. And so they didn't put it back. And then 2 years later, the city sued them. And then they had to put the things back. But they reached a deal where they pretty much were able to move those green things up like 18 feet and use the very bottom part of the wall for those billboards that they have down there. So that when you walk under it, you see like a little sliver of advertising and then the rest of the building is this art piece. So very interesting.
Yeah, I guess that's a nice compromise. You know, they still get their advertising space. It's just a bummer that it always comes back to fucking advertising and money and
classic
corporate sponsors. Like I hate advertisements on buildings. It drives me crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. I think there's a way to do them in a nice way, and billboards are definitely not it.
No, I mean, what I will say is I really enjoy the murals, you know, in Bushwick, there's a ton of murals, and especially near the Morgan Avenue stop, there's a lot of advertisement murals, but they're beautiful. You know, like people put a lot of work into them. They change them out every week or two, and they're nice to look at. They're not just some shitty poster or some like Verizon sign, you know, sign up $50 off.
Yeah. The craft that goes into them is really cool. At their core, they're still rotten, but at least
they are.
At least they're kind of nice to look at.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're still commissioning artists to make something beautiful, and they're paying them out. They're not just like printing something and slapping it on a building.
Yeah, it's true. What do you have?
So this week, we were driving home from Key West. It was like 9 or 10 at night, and we were driving by, and the streetlights changed from like that typical white or orange into like some weird deep reds for like a mile. And we were curious what was going on. So we looked it up, and apparently it's for nesting sea turtles, because the light pollution can confuse them. And then they don't go to the ocean or wherever the fuck the little baby sea turtles are supposed to go. They end up crossing into the roads, getting run over. So the red light, I guess it's less distracting to them, so they're more likely to make it on their journey and not get distracted by human. Nice. Yeah.
I'm surprised that they even let the cars drive by. Cause I remember learning that what the sea turtles do is when they hatch, their whole thing is they go towards the moon, what they think is the moonlight.
Yes. Yeah.
That leads them to the water somehow. And I guess, yeah, how do they even know? Turtles must be smart as fuck. But like,
I also learned that like 1 in 1,000 baby sea turtles actually make it to sexual maturity. Like they have a very low success rate.
All right. So then maybe they're dumb as fuck, but either way, they try to crawl towards the moon. And when they look at a streetlight, they think it's the moon. So they start crawling.
Exactly. Yep.
It's fucking lame, dude. Get a, you know, Darwin out here. I don't know what he's doing, but that's some Darwinism type shit.
Hey, I mean, the sea turtles are still around, so they're doing something right.
They were the best characters in Finding Nemo.
Finding Nemo, yeah. Squirt's the man.
That's all I got to say. Chris, where can the people find us?
We are at Sizzle Reel Gang on Twitter and Instagram. We are sizzlereelgang@gmail.com. Send us an email. We are sizzlereelgangthewebsite.com. It is new and improved.
And improved.
And of course, we have the Sizzle Reel Gold Line. Brr. That is 332-333-4361.
Wow, that was actually in my what the Wi-Fi I have here, that was very on time.
Was it? See, I can't hear you, but I could see your mouth and it looked like we had it.
Yeah, we'll see what happens when I actually sync this thing up, because then we might be totally out of sync.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. And look, if you have anything to say, if you're going to sign up for that Web3 thing, or if you got off of Netflix, or if you're on Twitch now, fucking call in, leave a message, let us know. And Joe Nana.
Sorry, Joe.
Next time you're in New York, you better
ignore me.
Chris. Yeah, that's right. All right. Thanks for listening. See you later. Bye.
Later.
Shishkin Productions Podcast.